This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore, and we are joined by one of the Seahawks rookies, a guy we're really excited to meet. Ugo Amadi is with us. Ugo Chukwu Amadi. Did I get it right?
Yes, sir. Right on the spot.
Now, how's camp going?
Camp is going good. You know, it's long days, you know, early mornings, less time sleeping, more time working.
How did you make your way to Oregon from Knoxville, Tennessee?
Well, I'm from Nashville.
Or, I'm sorry, Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville. So it's a crazy story, so you might want to get comfortable. coming out of high school, I graduated high school early, and at the time I committed to Ole Miss during my senior year of high school. And after the season, me and the head coach at the time, Hugh Freeze, we agreed that I would come in early after I graduated and got my diploma in December, which I did. Time came around. Next thing you know, he wants to bring me in the summertime and bring in a JUCO DB in early. And I told him I didn't want to do that. And he's like, well, that's kind of like the only option. I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to decommit. And then after that, tons of other SEC schools kept coming my way. The next day, literally, Les Miles was head coach at LSU at the time. Him and John Chavis came to my school the next day, offered me a scholarship. I ended up, this is crazy too, so I ended up committing to LSU the day they played in the Midget City Bowl in Nashville, which is in my area. They played Notre Dame that year. And right after the game, John Chavis leaves and takes a job at A&M. So at this time, I'm like sitting at the table with my parents. I'm like, man, where am I going to go? Because John Chavis was the one that recruited me, and he didn't tell me he was going to leave. And the day I committed was the day he leaves. So it was just, it was unbalanced. And I'm talking to the DB coach there. He's like, at that time, when new DCs came to a school, they would wipe out the whole staff, you know, bringing their own guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that may happen. So I'm just sitting at home. My family, we're all stressed, like, where am I going to go and stuff like that. Next thing you know, 48 hours later, John Chavis offers me an A&M. And at this point, I'm like, man, I can't trust you now, man. Like, you're playing, like, I'm a kid at the time. I'm like, man, now it comes with trust now. So I was like, nah, I'm not going to take the A&M offer. And then my trainer at the time, back in Nashville, he knew Jim Harbaugh's assistant, and he texted him like, hey, I got this 4-star DB interested in your program. Are you willing to give him an offer or a visit? And he gets a text back. He's like, oh, this isn't so-and-so, but I'm the DB coach at Oregon, and we need DBs bad in this class. Can you send me his transcript and stuff? You know, I sent my transcript. Everything turned out good. After the Rose Bowl game, they offered me a scholarship. I signed to Oregon without even visiting there or anything. Just a sight unseen.
Sight unseen. And it was a mistake phone call?
Mistake. Text message. Yeah, mistake.
Text message.
Body was texting Jim Harbaugh texting the defensive coordinator or DB coach at Oregon?
Yeah, DB coach, John Neal. You could ask him, man. It was a sight unseen, man. It was really crazy.
What made you think that Oregon was right for you then?
I had no idea. You know what's crazy? I was sitting down with one of my guys. He plays for the Jets now. We grew up together. And we was watching Oregon play in Michigan State. And he asked me, like, Ugo, if Oregon ever offers you, would you take the scholarship? I was like, yeah, I would. But at the time, I committed to Ole Miss. I'm like, but I don't think it would ever happen. And I was like, I didn't know Oregon was going to be the one for me. I just God had a bigger plan for me. I thought I was going to end up at Michigan. I thought I was going to go to Michigan.
So what was it like playing at Oregon?
It was fun. It was really good. I had a great time. I was a little homesick at first because I was 17 years old at this time, living on the West Coast by myself. You know, nobody in my family's been in this position to go that far in the athletic career, let alone be that far away from their family. And I come from a big family. So that was a big transition for me. And I guess the game in general and playing at Oregon forced me to make new friends, you know, so that was a blessing too.
What did you find about Oregon? I grew up mm-hmm. in a little redneck town on the other side of the state, yeah. in Klamath Falls. What did you find about Oregon?
Man, the rain.
Yeah.
The rain was no joke. I was like, man, like when I first got to Oregon, I remember they just kept issuing me like raincoats every day. I was like, there was nothing, no shorts, no, all was just raincoat, just protect you from the rain. And also, the people in that town were very welcoming. Like, even my brothers and siblings will all say that when they came to visit me for the game, like, they were tailgating, like, oh, just come over here, man. We're having a good time. Even at the churches I went to every Sunday, everybody in there was welcome. They weren't even worried about me being an athlete. They were just like, oh, man, you should love this church. Here, let me pray for you. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that.
That's really cool. You said you have a big family.
Yeah, I do.
How big?
I'm the youngest of five, and I have two little nieces, and I have a son as well.
That's awesome.
But my mom, my grandma, she had nine kids.
No kidding.
Yeah, my mom's the oldest one.
Oh, that's great.
Ugo, I want to ask you about, I'm just looking up, the Vince Lombardi Award that you won at Oregon. Mm-hmm. Some of these names, I mean, this is pretty, This is a big deal, yeah. Man. I mean, you're looking at in the NFL, Aaron Donald, Manti Te'o, Luke Kuechly, Ndamukong Suh, Brian Arakpo. I mean, it's just it's a great list of players yeah. here. Tell us about the things that they look at, and did you know you were in the running for this award?
No. That award right there came like blindsided me. I didn't have no idea, you know. The award I was really looking into was the Thorpe Award. I was like, all right, I think I have a chance, you know, being in the running for the Thorpe Award. And then when I didn't make the finalist cut for it, I was down, but I didn't let my playing down me as well. So I just kept pushing, and then Coach Chris Ball gave me a call like, hey, man, you're up for this Lombardi Award. And at this time, I'm training in California for the Combine. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we're going to fly you out there, you know, fly you to Houston because, you know, it's going to be a lot of guys. I was going up against Kyler Murray, the tackle from Kansas State. I was going to get some Clemson guys, a guy from Notre Dame. I'm like, man, I think I have no chance. Like, I have no chance winning, you know. But, like, that list is serious. And the people who are on that list, you can show that they show some dedication to the game. They know the game. It took time. And now that they know what they're doing, they're just going out there and just having fun and playing fast.
It's a little bit about off-the-field stuff too, right?
Yes,
about
sir.
Being what were some of the things that sounds like you graduated high school early, so
yeah.
good grades, yeah. all those kinds of things.
Being a good person on and off the field. You know, being able to be who you are, though, it's not something you can fake. Who you are off the field is something you can't fake. Because if a person doesn't like talking to the media, he's not going to talk to anybody outside of football as well. You know, this is just who I am. You know, I'm blessed. You know, to always be able to smile every day. You know, even when I'm in my bad time, I'm always smiling.
Yeah. See, what you're in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, it's a blessing. I'm dealing with the 1% now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Hey, one of the things that when you were drafted, I was looking up stats on you. 6 interceptions the last 2 years, 3 pick sixes, 4 forced fumbles. So you're a playmaker.
Yeah, yes, sir. You know, I just love being around the ball. You know, I have this ability. That's one thing I see when I was growing up in high school. I had a lot of guys had the ability, but they just let it go to waste. You know, God gave me this ability. I'm going to use every inch of it. You know, it's the speed I have. Not too many have that. I mean, I may be small, but I'm going to have something to battle for the taller guys with.
What's your biggest regret in life so far?
Biggest regret? I haven't had one yet. I haven't had a biggest regret.
Well, I have a suggestion for you.
I hope it is.
I mean, you're going to live the rest of your life knowing that you never beat Washington State.
I understand that. I understand. But you got to think about this, too. I will know that we made it farther than Washington State all 4 of my years. All four.
What do you mean you made it farther?
We made it farther.
Define farther.
Okay, let's start. Let me just start with one. And then this one should just really end this whole debate. We made it to the national championship.
Did you win it?
We made it to the national championship.
I know, but did you win it?
We represented the Pac-12. You was rooting for us. You for sure was rooting for us that game. Look.
I was. You know, when you put Washington, I'm your biggest rooter.
Oh, okay. I respect that. Yeah. But you was rooting for us for the Pac-12, though.
I was.
Okay, see, there you go.
Yeah, I was. But the head-to-head matchup, though.
Okay, yeah, y'all would. I'll give y'all that. But y'all ain't meet nobody in your state, though.
No, we beat Eastern Washington.
No, we ain't talking about that. We ain't talking about Eastern Washington. We ain't gonna go that low.
I've never heard that as an insult before. You never beat anybody in your state. That was
your state.
The best. That's why he's a Lombardi Award.
That's exactly right. Ready to go.
Okay, you might win that debate.
Yeah.
We're talking to Ugo Amadi here, Seahawks rookie cornerback. Seattle cornerbacks have a certain reputation,
mm-hmm.
and it tends to be a little bit taller.
Yeah.
Did you think they were interested in you?
I'm telling you, on the draft night, you can ask anybody else in my house. I told my parents, do not invite none of my friends or nothing over, because like it's a stress. I'm like, I don't know where I'm gonna go. You know, I'm just sitting at the house, you know, just watching people just get picked. And before Seattle called me, like I'm walking to my mom's room because she knew I was stressed. She's like, she told my sister to come get me and walk to talk to her in the room. I'm walking, and I just see a Seattle number call me. I'm like, hello. Hey, John Schneider. I was like, oh. And then I'm walking back to the TV. I'm hearing them talking. I'm like, man, what's going on? And my brother's like, who's that? And then Pete had gotten the phone. Like, it's Pete. Like, oh, my God. It's Pete. Oh, he's jumping on the couch. There's a video of it. I'm going to send it to y'all. He's jumping on the couch. It's Pete. Oh, we're lit. It's crazy. I had no idea Seattle wanted me. And, you know, I got emails from them like, oh, come to the local day. But at this time, I'm already in Tennessee. It's going to be a far flight. You know, but that was just a sight of seeing. That hit me with blindside. Like, I thought I was going to Atlanta or something like that. So I thought I was going to be staying in the South. But that was really just blindsiding.
How has it been so far?
I love it. You know, I'm back on the coast. I guess this is where it's meant for me to be. You know, the West Coast is the best coast, you know. So I love it a lot. I love Pete. He's a great guy. He knows football. He knows his DBs as well. He knows how to get them. He knows how to develop them as well. And, you know, we got great coaches. I have a great teammates. Bobby's been a – you know, it's crazy. My first guy here the first day, I was getting dressed in my locker, and the first person who came up to me and introduced himself was Bobby Wagner. Good guy, man, right there, man. So it's just been, I love it. The guys are, you know, nobody's bigger than who they are. Russ comes to talk to me. Everybody just, it's like one big family.
Pete Carroll probably doesn't get enough credit for how much he develops and coaches DBs still. I mean, he's still kind of hands-on mm-hmm. with you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I talked to him yesterday, too. You know, always worried about tackling, you know, especially in the secondary, you know. Especially at this league now, it's so much open field. Like, how the game has changed to spread, you got to be able to tackle in open field, especially at this level.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about, like, the thing when I looked at your highlights, when you get the ball in your hand, you play fast.
Yeah.
But you all of a sudden become electric when the ball gets in your hand.
I don't know. It's that adrenaline, man. As soon as I get the ball, it's a transition. I'm like, I'm trying to get to the end zone as fast as possible. Like, I wish you could, like, see how my body mechanics is, like, in, like, get the x-ray vision of how cool I'm looking to go the other way.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, what do you think about any chance of punt return, anything like that?
Man, I hope so. I mean, I've been practicing very hard at that. I've been on a special teams coach about that as well. So I just got to continue to keep preparing myself for that situation.
You seem like a great kid. Mm-hmm. Your parents proud of you?
Oh, very proud of me. Oh, my gosh. They're very proud. I got them first-class tickets for a flight for our first game. That my mom was like, oh, my gosh, we got first-class seats. Oh, my gosh. God is so good. I was like, man, just that right there, just put a smile on my parents' face right there, just the little things like that.
Okay, you can't answer this question. It doesn't matter to me, okay? But you can answer it any other way you want to.
Okay.
Would you rather play at free safety or at nickel corner?
It really doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. I swear, it really doesn't matter to me.
I told you can't answer like that.
You don't have the authority to tell him what he can.
I really don't. I couldn't even tell you that. Like, even when I was coming out of college and all the coaches were asking me to come by, like, what would you rather play? I'm like, it really doesn't matter. I'll just play whatever will help the team win, I'll play it. Like, I can't even give you a direct answer. Like, I'm just really just preparing myself for either or.
See, I should know better. I should ask better questions than that.
You should.
I mean, I went to the Murrow School of Communication at Washington State University, too, and I learned about journalism, and I just screwed up right there. 40 years later, I screwed up.
You're in the impression that carries some sort of international weight. He's from Tennessee and went to Oregon. What does he know about
It might sound impressive to him.
The Edward L. Murray School of Communication.
Maybe not. Do you like country music?
To be honest with you, I listen to it, but I'm not really a fan of it. You know what I mean?
I thought maybe being from Nashville.
See, that's what everybody. I get that all the time. But I'm a fan. Like, I listen to it. I'm not like biased from it. Like, I listen to country music.
Yeah. How about hot chicken? Nashville hot chicken.
That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You like that Prince's?
Prince's hot chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. I actually like. That used to be like my second home.
That place wrecked me when I went there. The Seahawks played Tennessee a couple years ago.
Danny used to weigh like 40 pounds heavier
really?
When he was on the road because he would just go to every
go eat some fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
Oh, it just destroyed me.
Do you like Prince's hot chicken or Wingstop?
I like Prince's hot chicken.
You like that?
But that's probably because of the reputation it has and the history that it was old guy who was out all night and his lady was upset with him, so she made his chicken too hot, and he was addicted to it after that.
Crazy story.
Was she trying to kill him?
Yeah, no, she was trying to punish him for his tomfoolery, being out on the town all evening.
I know we need to let him go. Can I squeeze one more in?
Okay.
Is it about Washington State?
I know
no.
it is.
Oh. No. It was a comment that you either made or maybe Primetime did or something. You look good, feel good, play good, pay good.
Yeah, that's what Primetime said.
Is that something that you live by too? Or?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The best way to make an impact in this game is to get the ball. You get the ball, you get paid. Simple as that.
There we go. Ugo, thank you so much, man.
No
problem, nice to
man.
Meet you.
Nice meeting y'all, too.
That was Ugo Amadi. We've talked to two of the rookies so far, Cody Barton and Ugo Amadi, and you've got a couple guys who are very mature and I would say un-rookie-like in the kind of composure they have and the way that they present themselves.
And it matters. I do think it's part of your maturity and you know how you look at your job. And it's, I think the last 2 years, they've really gotten back to getting these kind of guys, these kind of quality guys. And so, and then, you know, you see, like you heard in the interview, he said Bobby Wagner was the first guy to come up and talk to him. Same thing with Russell Wilson. So they've got a good thing going on right now. And this doesn't really matter, Seahawk fans. But for us, when we come out here, everybody's happy. You know, there's no more disgruntlement. There's no, you know, problems off the field. It just seems like, I mean, other than the fight that they had today, which is a natural thing that's going to happen, you know, it just seems like they've got a good thing going. Now, we'll see what happens out on the field. And, you know, I have to say, Ugo Amadi's in that mix to possibly be a safety or be a slot corner. And, you know, that's a question mark. But the defensive line now is the really big question mark. That's the only bummer out here. After that injury to LJ Collier, other than that, I think it's been a really productive camp. I think they've taken some steps, you know. You can never tell when you're just going against your own team. But our defense is facing a good offense this year. This could be the best offense that we've seen here since maybe 2005.
Can I try out my working theory on this team for you? You guys feel free to shoot it down. I want all skeptics out.
Do you think you need to say feel free to shoot it down to Jim?
No, I probably don't. That was probably unnecessary.
Yeah, I'm usually not skeptical or cynical ever.
I think that this team is exactly in the same spot where it was in 2012. Except the complete opposite. And what I mean by that is that year you had one side of the ball in 2012, one side of the ball that you felt you had pretty well sorted out. And you had the other side of the ball with a huge question mark, primarily involving young guys who were recent additions to the team. In 2012, they had the defense. We saw that over the course of 2011, and I think felt that, okay, this team's set up. It's got two great safeties. It's got an incredible cornerback with a lot of potential in Richard Sherman, a guy who just coming off a Pro Bowl season in Brandon Browner, and you had no clue about the offense, specifically the quarterback. We wondered if and expected maybe it would be Matt Flynn, but you knew that Russell Wilson was also competing. But that was the question of, do you have the quarterback? They've got the offense this year. That's the side of the ball that you feel really good about. I think that they are, this offensive line, it's probably the best the offensive line has been, certainly since 2012, but I think this offensive line is probably better than they were in 2012, because in 2012, you're starting J.R. Sweezy your first game, and he's just converting from defensive line to the other side. I think they're really well set up here with experienced guys. They've got a top five quarterback in Russell Wilson. They've got, I think, two running backs that could each rush for 1,000 yards. What you don't know about is the defense. You know that you've spent a lot of draft capital on the defense over the past 2 years, especially in the secondary. But you don't know if any of those guys are going to be able to pop and be able to play. Are you guys buying my theory? It's like 2012, except the exact opposite.
Yeah, I buy your theory, Danny. I was reading Clayton's story, 710sports.com, this morning. He thinks it might be the best offense ever, or has the potential to be. I just wonder a little bit about it, because I think we're discounting Doug Baldwin not being there. I don't think they're going to be gangbusters in the passing game right away.
We're discounting how good that offense was in 2005. Sean Alexander set a single-season record for touchdowns, and they would go 80 yards at the drop of a hat. That team's ability, that was a really good offense.
Yeah,
it really was.
Well, the professor's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe they will be. And he said that they scored. I didn't realize. Did you know that they averaged 30 points a game the last 8 games of the season last year? I wasn't aware of that. And I'm sure Baldwin missed some of those games. So if you're sitting here like I am thinking, well, let's see how it goes without Baldwin, that's a good case point there that you can say, well, look what they did last year. So I'm with you on that, though, because I think there's all kinds of defensive concerns. I look at these guys that you hope are going to pop along the defensive line, but for every guy that you think is going to pop, there's going to be, just like the Mariner bullpen, I mentioned that a lot. I mean, there's going to be guys that don't. So, I mean, Rasheem Green, I know Dave likes him, and he's sounds like he's doing well in the beginning part of the training camp. But I'm not really going to buy into Rasheem Green if he's really lighting it up in August, because he did that last year. So I don't know how you judge that. We'll have to find out September 8th once when they play Cincinnati. But, yeah, I'm with you on the offense, and I feel like this year, too, we know that they've got the running game, ball control, but ball control and time of possession is going to be even more important this year with that defense trying to keep them off the field.
You got three Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. Justin Britt was an alternate.
Was an alternate a couple years ago.
Right. Upati's made three or four. Dwayne Brown's been all pro, actually, and I think five Pro Bowls for him. So, yeah, I think the guy to watch there is Jermaine Effetti. I really love Will Disley and Ed Dixon. And then, you know, I think the receiver thing will sort itself out. I think the guy that's, I don't want to say take a big jump, but a guy that's going to improve even more is Russell. I think this is going to give him a lot more confidence. Pass blocking is going to be better. So, yeah, I think, well, there's no question that the offense is more established than the defense. But especially with this LJ Collier thing. This bothers me more and more as the day goes on. And we'll see if they end up signing somebody else. But you're right, Jim. I mean, they, look, Rasheem Green is like a great player to me in theory. We need to see him play it out. I think Jacob Martin, you know, but him, Trey Flowers, those guys all, even Shaquille Griffin, we need to see them prove it this year. So there's a lot to prove on that defense.
It is Danny David Moore. Dave just mentioned LJ Collier. It's not a garden variety sprain. That's what we found out today. When you hear something that's a little off and a little weird, I usually think it's ominous. But conceivably, it could be relatively good, right? If it's just at the top of his foot, maybe it's not a high ankle sprain.
Mm.
It never works that way, does it?
No.
It never works that way that they come back and say, we thought this was 6 weeks yesterday, but now he might be back there in 2 weeks. What does that mean for this team? Pete had some answers to that. We'll dive into that next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Curtis, I believe there's a cut in there from Pete Carroll because he was asked today, are you going to need to go shopping with LJ Collier out for, I think we've got to assume that he's going to be out the rest of August. I think that's relatively safe. Pete hedged and would not talk about any sort of potential timeline for a return. But I think it would be a pretty safe assumption that he's not going to be here for August. You've got to prepare for the first six games without Jaron Reed, who actually didn't even finish practice today. But that was because of different stuff. That was because of fisticuffs. But Pete was asked, do you need to go get another defensive lineman? Here was what he said.
That hurts our depth though, a little bit, you know. But we do have guys to fill in, play in the five technique spot. Quentin Jefferson's doing a nice job, and also Rasheem Green can go over there too. I don't think we're out of it now with numbers wise. We're okay, but we got to be careful. We got to hope we can keep it together now.
Five technique is just a shade outside of the offensive tackle, so the guy that plays in that position is. Yeah, it's pretty important in this defense, and you know, the difference is you're going up against an offensive tackle, you know, who's a bigger guy. The perils inside are that you get double teamed by a guard and a center, but that's now all of a sudden looking like the thinner part of this D line. I mean, you know, they traded away Frank Clark, and then you know, and then Jaron Reed for 6 weeks, but then you know they brought in Earl Mitchell. I like this kid. He's not a kid, actually.
He's 30, isn't he?
Yeah.
32.
He's 32
years
old.
He'll be 32 in September.
Yeah, 10-year veteran. So, what is he? He's in Arizona. Bear down. Bear down, C. Roach.
Absolutely, every day.
So, anyway, you've got him. Not every day. Come on.
It is for him.
Hurt yourself. You know, and then they also got the pierogi prince of Parma. Why do they call him that?
I don't know. Maybe he likes pierogies.
Jamie Meter. The other guy, Owl Woods, is the other one. So, yeah, those guys look good, you know, and I'm not devaluing that position, but there's not a lot of, it's not super complicated. Like, basically, you're holding a double team, you're just trying to hold your gap. So, those guys are good at it. I mean, you look at those guys on film, all three of them, they're really hard to move. So, they look, you know, okay in that regard, but you're not going to get the pass rush out of what you would get from a guy like Jaron Reed. So it's, yeah, all of a sudden you're looking at, like, it's not just like, let's wait and see if Rasheem Green steps up. Like, it's kind of an emergency. It looks like he has to become, you know, that player. He needs to take up the slack there. He needs to make that jump, you know, where all of a sudden the game slows down for him and he starts playing like he did in college.
But when you look at the starting defensive line right now, if they had a game tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, it sounds like it would be Quentin Jefferson, Rasheem Green, Puna Ford, and probably Al Woods.
Yeah.
So,
well,
that
you're going to have a different defensive end.
Yeah.
You would have someone else that's rushing the passer.
Yeah, Jacob Martin, maybe.
Yeah
maybe so Cassius
Martin.
Marsh.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy.
I would bet it's Cassius is probably your outside pass rusher,
yeah.
Or if Ziggy's not ready to go.
Are you excited about Cassius Marsh?
Yeah,
and I know
I am.
I sound negative a lot, and I think part of it is I was just looking at Marsh's stats the other day. So he had 5.5 sacks last year, and you're going, well, that's pretty good, right? But then it was only in 3 games, and 2.5 came against Oakland, and Oakland didn't have much of an offensive line. And then he had one sack in two other games.
Hold on, so you'd rather he had 5 one-sack games?
Yes. Yeah.
Really? Why?
Just more consistency.
Well, I think you're discounting the Oakland offensive line.
You're looking at it because you wanted wanted to devalue some of Frank Clark's stats because they came against Oakland.
Right. Correct.
That is correct.
Well, I'm not wrong about that. I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. But I'm not that – I like Cassius Marsh. I do. But I'm as far as him being a huge factor this year, I'm not really expecting – are you expecting that?
Well, what if he gets 5.5 sacks like he did last year?
That'd be good.
Yeah.
See, that'd be like a C.
Yeah. I think he can get 8 sacks.
Yeah.
Look, I don't
think... He's not getting 8 sacks.
I think it's very possible he'll end up with 8 sacks.
Really?
And I don't think that that means he's some sort of world beater. Somebody's going to get sacks. That's going to happen in this defense.
Right.
Like, there's a certain minimum amount of sacks. It's what happens in the NBA. Like, you can average 18 points on a really bad team and not be that great of a player.
Okay, wait a minute. What makes you think it's going to happen in this defense if you don't have the personnel to get to the quarterback?
Well, because somebody's going to get those edge rush opportunities. Somebody's going to have that. There are going to be, what is the team with the least amount of sacks still ends up with like 28?
Yeah, everybody always thinks about this way, like, oh, those sacks from Frank Clark and Jaron Reed, they went out the door. No, they didn't. They just created a void for an opportunity for other guys to get those sacks.
And I think it's really difficult for a guy who is expected to be the best pass rusher to get 12 sacks, as opposed to somebody to flash and have a season where they get 8 when nobody's really expecting it.
What do you think they'll hit? They had 43 last year. What would you say, like 38 this year?
Yeah, I think 38 would be. I think if over underline, I would set it 40, and I would take the under.
Yeah, it's 39, 40 a year since Pete's been here. That's the average that they've gotten a sack. So, again, they're
Do we put too much emphasis on sacks?
Yeah.
Someone
well,
texted that in.
You can, never, sacks is a you can huge... never emphasize sacks too much.
Yeah, sacks
are you sure?
Is a huge
are you sure?
Play.
Look at the Chiefs last year.
Yeah, but, I mean, you get a sack, and instead of, like, 3rd and 3, you've got, like, a 3rd and 12 to 15. It's a huge play. But this defense has not been predicated on sack numbers. They've never had, like, off the chart, like some of those years were like Buffalo and Carolina. They were getting like 55, 60 sacks. They've never gotten anything like that.
A lot of times you will see teams that have the highest sack numbers also give up the biggest number of big plays.
Sure.
And that's probably the best measurement, as opposed to just your volume of sacks, is how many big plays you give up. Maybe that I could create a new form of toxic differential.
You should
use the Chiefs as an example. I didn't quite understand that. They had 3 guys that had double-digit sacks last year, and they had one of the worst defenses in the league.
Yeah, I think they were second. They might have been first in sacks.
And what they do
reflects
a team that takes a lot of risks.
Right.
And you could say, do they take a lot of risks because and leave guys exposed, or do they have to take a lot of risks because they don't have guys that are good enough in coverage?
Yeah, you know, the answer here has always been develop players. You know, because every time we go into, you know, we're worried about the pass rush. You know, right now, you know, John was talking about maybe going to a 3-4. No, that's not the answer. The answer is develop players to play in Pete's defense. So they're not going to blitz more. And one of the reasons why the sack totals aren't a little bit higher, probably, and, you know, we always say, send Bobby more. Bobby's a great pass rusher. But, you know, they don't want to do that. They're going to rush 4, and they're not going to compromise the defense. And, you know, so the answer is not, you know, go to 3-4 to get the linebackers on the field or, you know, blitz more. The answer is these guys have to develop into the kind of players that will fit into this defense. And they've done that.
What about a 2-5? You had two
down linemen.
I heard
you talking about that the other day on Bob Gross and Tom.
5 linebackers. Because you got 3 good starters in KJ, Bobby, and then throw in Mingo.
Who's going to line up on the line, Danny?
Well, I don't know. Michael Kendricks seems like he flattened Travis Homer pretty quickly.
Yeah, maybe you're going to put him up against a guy like, say, DJ Fluker?
No, I'm going to put him out real wide. So it's just I'm gonna spread
them
out.
And then just run it right up the middle.
Yeah. What did they call it? A wide 9? No, Bobby's in the middle. We're paying him a lot of money, so he'll be able to.
And he's gonna get double teamed.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently,
there's a good thought there for a minute.
There's a flaw in my approach. Apparently, you need 5 techniques and 3 techniques.
Well, yeah, because
I've about had enough with the 5 tech and the 3 tech and the 1 tech. I've about had enough of that. It's just covering gaps. But
my favorite is when you reacted to somebody who's like, well, he's played 3 technique, but he has no experience with 5 technique.
No, it was 1. one technique. Oh, he's totally lost at three technique. I'm like, he's lost? He lined up on the other side of the fat guy that he is across from. That's what the difference is there. You know, and as a matter of fact, when I was playing for the Seahawks and we had a 4-3, we'd have one guy based on a strong or a weak defense, one guy on the one technique, which is just inside of the guard or outside shade of the center, and then the other one on the outside shade of the guard. If they switched strength, I'd say check, strong left, and then this guy would become the one and this guy would become the three. So there's not a big difference. You know, it's just inside playing against fat guys. What side of the fat guy are you on? That's what that is. There's nothing complicated about that. Fat guy that's getting ready to hold you, by the way.
Oh, this is Danny David Moore. It's time for us to find out what we've learned. We'll do that next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It is time to find out what we've learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
Start pushing buttons, Jim.
This hour, also brought to you by Frostbrewed Coors Light.
Ah, that sounds good right now.
Curtis!
Danny!
What did we learn today other than the fact that you are a fantastic sweeping the dial narrator? Who is it, Lastly?
Jordan Lastly, yeah.
Lastly, who showed he was Raiders material by getting into two fights and kicking a ball into the pond.
I like that move, throwing the ball in the pond.
I do, too. My favorite, a couple years ago, Brandon Marshall got himself thrown out. This is 10 years ago. Got himself thrown out of Broncos practice because he just kept punting balls. Like, he wanted a new contract, and there was, like, video of him just, like, running, grabbing a ball and kicking it as far as he could. Running, getting another ball and kicking it as far as he could.
And he wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
The only thing is, there's some really good dudes that are equipment guys around the NFL.
Yeah.
And they got to go get him. Remember I apologized to Doug West, who's the I tipped over a whole table of Gatorade because I was mad. Yeah. So I got kicked out of a game.
Yeah.
And he had to clean it up, so I apologized to him.
See, Raj, what did we learn?
We started out today by learning Jim's preferred alternative to the Blue Angels.
Well, I know you're supposed to say that you like the Blue Angels, but I'd be lying if I said I do.
What about now that they moved their practice so they don't have to close I-90?
You don't have to close I-90, so that's good. That's good. But it's kind of, I was thinking about it because everybody loves the Blue Angels. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you ask 100 people, do you like the Blue Angels, what, 95 are going to say yes? I'm in the five that's going to say no because I've seen them year after year after year after year. It's the same act. I know it's a terrific act, and I was thinking about it in terms of like Skillet. Like I would go to 100 Skillet concerts and enjoy every one of them, but I don't want to see the Blue Jay or I don't want to see the Blue Angels.
The Blue Jays.
I don't want to see the Blue Jay fans either. Danny, you're grimacing. I don't know why, but I would.
You just said you would rather see Skillet.
100 times over the Blue Angels? Of course, yeah.
You'd get tired of Skillet.
That's
no, I don't think so.
That's heresy. I know that everybody thinks that I take every cheap shot that comes into my head about the Cougs. I show restraint, and I'm going to tell you why. When you said, because I've seen their act before, and I don't need to see it again, I was going to say, yet you're still a Cougs fan.
Well, that's different. That's different. The Blue Angels act is the same every year. And it's terrific. I understand that. The Cougs, you know, there's always, they're ranked number 21. This might be the year we beat you in the Apple Cup. And so there's some possibilities for things to happen in a different way.
I thought it was going to be that you find a different way to blow it in choosing to fumble the ball instead of giving up the late touchdown.
Yeah, I got to admit, I'm at a point now where the Apple Cup this year, if we lose by a little bit and we're more competitive, I'd almost take that because we've just been getting shelled.
What else we learned, Curtis?
We also learned today that the fate of society is at stake.
Those kinds of hits where you go, where you hear everybody go, ooh, I'm like, I don't think they're booing. I think they're saying, like, wow, that's awesome. Did you see that hit? So you're taking that part of it away. Everything is on the side of safety. And, you know, I know a lot of people go, what, you want that guy to get hurt? I'm like, no, I want the guy who doesn't have his head on a swivel to not be such a donkey. That's what I want. So when you start regulating all of this stuff, all of a sudden people's sense of survival starts to go out the window. And I just think it's bad for society.
How long do you think it'll take you to get used to saying donkey instead of your other word?
Oh, man. I'll never get used to it.
You came right out with donkey. That was.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
That, like, when you start taking care of everybody and every last little thing, you take away like their survival instincts.
No, you can extend, like, the argument.
You see, every once in a while, somebody just walks across the crosswalk without even looking. I would never do that. Mm-hmm. I never assume that everybody's going to stop just for me because they're supposed to. No, you always look both ways.
Because cars are bigger than you and it'd hurt
right.
if one hit you.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, well, you're going to be in huge trouble. Yeah, but you're going to be messed up.
Yeah.
Because you just took on a truck.
He's going to get a citation and you're going to have broken bones.
Yeah, so same thing with a guy running around. I'm just chasing this football play here. Hopefully I'll make a tackle. Bam! You know, you learn something from that.
I would say this. Buffalo herd moves as fast as its slowest members. And so in that way, the thinning of the herd, when those stragglers get taken out, it allows the entire herd to speed up.
That's what we're talking
about.
And
if we're going to protect donkeys on the football field, your entire football team is going to be stupider because they are not weeded out by having their head knocked to next Tuesday.
Correct. That is correct.
That's an interesting way of putting it. I'm still not convinced that stupider is a word, but that was a good way of putting it.
Finally today, we learn what it would be like if Jim pulled a LeBron.
I mean, my kids as teenagers are embarrassed of me. Were.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Well,
they're in their 20s and they're still embarrassed.
Would LeBron James be embarrassed?
Yeah. Yeah, like, Dad, everybody knows you can dunk, okay?
Yeah.
You're the greatest player in the world.
You're trying to steal my thunder here. Yeah.
I want to see what Mikey and Stevie would do. They play for a team called Local Hoops. If I got out there doing lay-in drills, oh, my God. Talk about disowning me on the spot.
They would die.
Oh,
yeah.
Then Jason Whitlock would come in. Jim Moore, sit your butt down.
No. I'm thinking about doing it now.
Oh, God. Poor Stevie and Mikey.
Be so funny.
Don't put yourself at odds with everybody in the household, Jim.
I want to see you start raining threes in the lamp.
And the kids on the team, hey, look, Mr. Moore's out here. What's he doing out here? Well, give him the ball. Let's see what he's got.
Didn't Brock a couple of years ago start throwing down dunks on the other end of a court during one of his daughter's basketball games?
Did he really?
I believe he tried to.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did dunk because he wanted to dunk at the age of 40, and I'm not sure if he did.
I think he did. I think he made it at 40.
On a regulation hoop?
I think so.
That's pretty sad what happens because I did it age 40. Now, it wasn't like a, you know, thunder dunk or anything, but I thought, you know, I could do it at age 50 maybe. Remember when I tried to jump out at Safeco or now T-Mobile? And I got like, it felt like somebody was tackling me around the ankles as I tried to jump. Yeah,
imagine,
jumping ability goes the wayside.
Now imagine if you'd always felt that way when you tried to jump.
Is that how you feel, Danny?
Probably, yes.
I'm always amazed that people, when they go in for dunks, go off of 1 foot. Because my natural inclination is to go off of two.
I think it's more important. I think it's more impressive that if you can do it off of two.
Is it? Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You land and spring up?
Yeah, I mean, it's... Whereas when you're running, you get a running head start and jump into it. That's how I did it in high school. But then, you know, when you can really jump, you just go right off of two legs. I think that's more impressive.
What age did you first dunk?
16.
God. And you dunked in high school games?
Yeah.
How awesome did that feel?
I dunked on a guy in my junior year, and I got also a foul. And I made the three-point play, and I could not stop smiling. And I was trying to be cool about it, like, yeah, I do that all the time. And I was just on the free throw line with the biggest grin in my face. I was like, wow. It was like my lifetime dream.
I still stand by the statement. If you offered me $1 million or said you'll be able to dunk from the age of 16 to the age of 25, I'd take the dunking.
Yeah, you go ahead and take your dunking.
And what would you do? Just go out to parks and just dunk on people?
And I would wreck people's pride. I would have gotten as fat as possible. Probably been smoking in between games and then just go out. Boom!
I'll keep making lay-ins and enjoy the $1 million.
Yeah, I think I'd take the dunk.
I don't know, Danny. Where would you use it? That's the problem.
I would use it all the time. I'd go down and hang out at Green Lake. I'd be like Billy Hoyle in White Men Can't Jump. I'd hustle people. I could maybe make the $1 million through hustling them. I'm like, it doesn't matter what I do. I'm going to be able to dunk till the age of 25. I would have been as wide as I was tall and just spring.
Why only 25?
Well, that's realistic. Like, the idea that someone that looks like me could dunk at the age of 30 is just patently unrealistic. Like, at least it's within the realm of possibility. People my size have been able to dunk at the age of 25.
Yeah. Spud Webb?
Yeah. He won a dunk contest.
Yeah, he did.
Jessamine McIntyre is our producer. Curtis Rogers was on the board. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.